Hello and welcome to the Innovation Forum podcast for Friday 16th of October with me, Ian Welsh. Coming up is a conversation I had recently with Renata Nogueira, South America Sustainability Manager for Cargo, and Gonzalo La Cruz, Managing Director, Solidaridad South America. We talked about the collaboration between the two businesses and some of the challenges in driving more sustainable supply chains in Paraguay, Colombia and Brazil. That's coming up a little later. First up, though, is the usual roundup of some sustainable business news. An implication of 2020's pandemic is an anticipated 7% decline in global energy-related emissions, according to the International Energy Agency in its latest annual World Energy Outlook. Overall, energy demands are expected to have dropped 5% in 2020 compared to 2019. Only World War and the 1929 Depression sparked greater drops in demand. The IEA says that there has been a move away from energy from coal towards solar power. Coal accounts for only 20% of the world's energy use, a level not seen since the Industrial Revolution. The IEA warns that despite the 2020 figures, not enough is being done to hardwire structural shifts away from fossil fuels long term, and that emissions are set to bounce back with a rebounding economy. Investment in green energy needs to increase from $300 billion to $1.6 trillion by 2030 to tackle climate change, the IEA says, particularly in emerging economies. Increasing use of nitrogen-based fertilisers in agriculture in recent decades has led to a spike in nitrous oxide in the atmosphere, a gas with an effect 300 times more potent in terms of global warming than carbon dioxide. A paper in the journal Nature says that emissions of nitrous oxide have risen 30% since the 1970s. Overall, atmospheric levels of N2O are 20% higher than in 1750. However, the paper points to efforts in Europe that have actually cut N2O emissions significantly there since 1990. Better application of fertilisers and reducing groundwater pollution are among the simple yet effective solutions. A new report from the ILO and WWF puts the case for integrating nature-based solutions to spark economic recovery from the COVID-19 pandemic. It argues that as 1.2 billion jobs in sectors such as agriculture, forestry, fisheries and tourism are directly dependent on the effective management and long-term sustainability and health of ecosystems, investment in nature makes sense. Nature-based solutions offer an opportunity to create what the paper calls immediate no-harm jobs. On the other hand, if half the world's GDP depends more or less on nature, as the report alleges, then stressing or dismantling vital ecosystems would have enormous potential costs. UK-based retailer Tesco is the latest company to establish a revolving credit facility in which rates and interest are tied to progress against key environmental targets. Under the terms of the deal with BNP Paribas and NatWest, Tesco will benefit from lower rates if it meets commitments on Scope 1 and 2 emissions, including sourcing renewable energy from on-site generation and reducing food waste. And the company's had a good week with the announcement that it achieved 100% RSPO certified palm oil sourcing for its international markets. It had managed this for the UK in 2015. The achievement means that the company will meet its net zero deforestation pledge for palm oil by 2020 that it made via the Consumer Goods Forum in 2010. Finally this week, it seems that trust in sustainability reporting is on the increase, albeit starting from a low rate. A new GlobeScan survey for the Global Reporting Initiative says that 47% of people agree that companies are truthful about their social and environmental performance. In 2003, only 30% thought this way. Regional differences are stark. Survey respondents in the EU are particularly sceptical about corporate reporting, and Russians are the least trusting, with 70% not believing what companies say. This contrasts with the picture further south and east, where Asians are far more likely to trust companies, with 80% agreeing that they are truthful in Indonesia, closely followed by Vietnam, Thailand and China. A reason for this may be that a number of Asian stock markets have required ESG reporting over the past few years, leading to a perception of greater corporate transparency on these issues. Innovation Forum's 2020 Future of Plastics Conference is coming up next week. It will be held via our interactive online platform over 3 days, from 20th to 22nd of October. Among the expert panellists will be representatives of Coca-Cola, European Partners, Dow Chemical Company, Anheuser-Busch InBev and Greenpeace. And there's still time to join us. Sign up online. Following up swiftly in the first week of November is Innovation Forum's Sustainable Landscapes and Commodities event. We have an extended conference over 3 days from 3rd to 5th November. And among the 300 plus taking part are senior representatives from Sime Darby, April, Cargill, Unilever, Tate & Lyle, WWF, Burger King and the Consumer Goods Forum. All details are on innovationforum.co.uk, and there's still time to join us, and if you register this week before the 16th of October, you can save £75 on passes. We're also continuing our ongoing action research project into smallholder farmers, and in addition we're developing some new research for the apparel sector. Do get in touch if this is of interest. A couple of weeks ago, I spoke with Renata Nogueira, South America Sustainability Manager for Cargill, and Gonzalo La Cruz, Managing Director, Solidaridad South America, about how they are working together to engage producers in Paraguay, Colombia, and Brazil to drive sustainability in Cargill's commodity supply chains. It's a challenging task, not least trying to find the right technology to help producers increase yields while preserving ecosystems. Renata, why don't you outline your cooperation with Solidaridad, why you're working with them, and what you're setting out to achieve?
Well, Cargill is committed to transforming the supply chain to protect forests and native vegetation. We have committed to eliminating deforestation from our agriculture supply chains, and we are partnering with Solidaridad in this endeavor. We are connected to ensure a sustainable, a scalable, and efficient agriculture activity with models that involve farmers and processors, building supply chains that comply with international standards and that also protect natural resources. Using digital tools and data-driven information in agricultural production enables Cargill suppliers to adopt continuous improvement models based on their performance. We really like this approach.
Gonzalo, for you, what are the principal challenges you face in your collaboration with Cargill, and what are you doing to help the company counter them?
First, I think is to agree on long-term goals and commitments. And I think this is a process by each partner knows each other. But I think in order to address the critical issues that we are facing, we must keep long-term commitments to it. That's one. Another important challenge is how we can work together to look into issues beyond the supply chain. You know, issues that refers to common problems in the issue of, for instance, reduced biodiversity and deforestation, and how we can align our work with the existing legal framework and the commitment of local government. All these three issues, long-term goals, looking beyond the supply chain and trying to work together beyond our commitments internal and looking for how we can cooperate with local governments, I think that are an important challenge.
I know that you've been working to develop something called the SSS standard. Renata, perhaps you can tell us a bit about the SSS standard and how it helps Cargill sustainably source commodities in South America.
Our SSS program is a program created by Cargill many years ago and sources soybeans from farms that have no deforestation and no conversion, and to meet high standards for agriculture practices, labor, and also environmental impact. We believe in transformation, so through free technical assistance, farmers continuously improve their operations, showing progress year by year. We believe that a verified program has the potential to significantly change the supply chain for soy from South America.
What exactly is the SSS then? What do the three S's stand for?
It means sustainably sourced and supplied.
Is it used across your commodities?
Well, we use only for soy nowadays, but the idea is that this standard can be used to other products as well.
Okay. Gonzalo, what comments do you have on the SSS standard and how do you think it's helped Cargill sustainably source, particularly soy in South America?
I think it's a practical approach that gives guidance to producers to understand what is what is expected from them to enhance sustainability. So it looks into social issues, to treat the workers basically complying with the law, and then to go further up in things that can be of importance for the workers in terms of the environment and in terms of making them more productive, which deals with the economic issues. So these three issues are key. The farmers know exactly what is expected, and they have the possibility to dialogue and to adapt depending on their existing circumstances. No, not all producers are ready to enhance their practices. What the SSS allows in collaboration with civil societies like ours, like Solidaridad, is to help the farmer with tailor-made plans for continuous improvement.
Renata, turning back to you, soy traders clearly have been under pressure about links between sourcing of soy and deforestation and including of the Cerrado grasslands in South America. So what is Cargill doing specifically to tackle this and ensure that there is no deforestation or biome destruction related risks in its supply chains?
Cargill's work is centered on eliminating deforestation and protected native vegetation beyond forest. And the Brazilian Cerrado is huge. We are talking about a biome that has more than 200 million hectares, and it covers almost 24% of the Brazilian territory. It's a very important soy production for the country. As the heartland of agriculture production in Brazil, the Cerrado feeds major markets in both Europe and Asia. Although only 8% of the area of this biome is covered with soybeans, it represents around 50% of the Brazilian soy production, with 18 million soybeans planted. The recent study from AgroSatellite shows that 93% of the last crop was produced on areas that were not native vegetation between 2014 and 2019. It means that the soy expansion in the Cerrado biome occurred in areas that were being used for other crops or were abandoned for any reason. And this trend has been kept since the beginning of the year 2000s. It means that only 7% of the expansion was linked to conversion of native vegetation. We reinforce, however, our commitment to find lasting solutions for protecting forests and native vegetation in the Cerrado in ways that are economically viable for farmers. And the solutions that protect this native vegetation require engaging with the local farming communities. So we really believe that to find solutions to end the deforestation in the Cerrado biome has to engage producers from the region. We have to show them alternatives for them to expand their production and feed the world.
Gonzalo, for you then, is this the nub of the problem then? If you don't engage with local communities who are understandably trying to maximize revenues, they have families to feed, they have bills to pay and other obligations, if the risks of deforestation or destruction in the Cerrado of native vegetation, if they are to be really addressed, then really it's going to be the farming communities I have to be engaged with first. Would you agree?
I think it's learning by doing to agree with the local society. What is the right balance, between enhancing livelihood, living in harmony with the environment? What we learned is that, and we are learning this together with the Cargill, particularly in the Cerrado, is that there are not fixed solutions. For every circumstance, for every state, for every landscape, we must find out the critical balance. So it's important that the local population, the producers, the local authorities, together with the companies, they come to consensus and agreement on the way forward.
Let's think a bit about some of the things you're doing specifically in different countries. And I know you have been working particularly in Paraguay, Colombia, and Brazil. So Renata, tell me a little bit about what's going on in Paraguay.
In Paraguay, our partnership with Solidaridad is focused on the implementation of the SSS program. As I mentioned already, zero deforestation in conversion standard that provides technical support to soy producers through a continuous improvement approach. And Solidaridad has trained field technicians and Cargill Commercial on the use of a digital tool that enable the evolution of the performance of almost 190 fields against Cargill SSS criteria and local legislation as well. It corresponds to approximately 55,000 hectares of area.
So, Gonzalo, for you, what are the highlights of the collaboration in Paraguay?
I think Paraguay is a rather very interesting and promising area of work. First, because the soy is developed in the so-called Mata Atlantic Forest, and the legal framework is very stringent, and it has put a halt on any further deforestation. The areas for farming are very clear, and the producers are highly organized through cooperatives or independent. And there is a very interesting past work by which the society understands what are the issues that are at stake and how these issues can be addressed. So I would say, in general, the soy sector in Paraguay is highly organized and with high potential. Then, if you have Cargill, the company who is truly interested in having a deforestation-free supply chain, in the case of Paraguay, the SSS acts rather smoothly with farmers who understand how they can go forward. What we are doing is helping them with digital tools to understand their most important and critical gaps in all these 3 S, then to organize a plan for them and to help them with what is needed to accomplish a higher performance.
Renata, Colombia, what are you doing in Colombia?
Okay, in Colombia, together with a very important supplier called Oleo Flores, Cargill and Solidaridad will work to benefit 400 smallholder producers, palm producers, and also their families in a region called Norte de Santander in Bolívar. Among them, 144 female heads of households. So it's a very, very important program for us. This program, which has a duration of 1 year, will positively impact more than 6.4 thousand hectares planted with palm. In the case of Colombia, the use of these tools will promote the effective incorporation of sustainability practices aligned to voluntary standards such as the Roundtable on Sustainable Palm Oil, the RSPO, the International Sustainability and Carbon Certification, ISCC, and the Rainforest Alliance and the Tropical Forest Alliance.
Thank you. So Gonzalo, for you, what are the key points of the Palm Oil Project in Colombia?
The important issue here is that we are trying to help producers with understanding their limitations to access credit. And we are combining the existing digital tools that are used by the extension workers and the farmers themselves to identify which are these core issues that needs attention in terms of not only technical assistance, but also credit. So we are testing a digital tool, which is called AgroPrestamo. And we are very happy that Oleo Flores, this company, is quite supportive of this advanced methods of work with the smallholders and medium-scale producers.
Brazil, Renata, what are the principal components and the highlights, if you like, of your project in Brazil?
I believe that with Solidaridad, we are doing a very important thing, which is engaging producers in a discussion around solutions for the Cerrado biome, specifically with AIBA, the Associations of Producers of Western of Bahia. So it's a very unique front that we are together with because we've been facing a lot of polarization in the fields, and we are having this opportunity to be with producers and a very important NGO trying to find ways to really bring more sustainability for the region.
And does this involve working closely with the farmers?
Yeah, we are working with the Association of Producers. I mean, we sit together with producers to discuss about the context of the region, the production, agricultural practices, and we together, we try to find ways to make the region even more sustainable.
Gonzalo, what are the kind of key characteristics for this work in the Cerrado biome in Brazil? What are the things that, for you, are the real challenges?
The main challenge here is to find the right technology that is more profitable for farmers and that can reduce the carbon footprint. There are interesting prospects to reduce the carbon balance in soy production and also to look into the needed stimuli or incentives that the farmers need to reorient the investment in, for instance, already deforested areas with low productivity. I'm referring to pastures of low productivity. So we think that producers can invest more in those areas and plant soy and get more with less.
That, I guess, sums up the nub of the problem, isn't it? Trying to increase productivity, increase yields, but with fewer inputs and not with just simply you taking up more land.
What I want to stress is that there is no like a package that you can just replicate elsewhere. Because we are talking, for instance, in West Bahia, where we are working, you have these dry spells. This is rain-fed irrigation. They do not all have access to irrigation, just a small portion. So it is, how can they reduce emissions by at the same time increasing yields and reducing risk? So what farmers need is support on technical options, support on financial mechanisms that make it easier for them to adapt and adopt improved technologies, and also incentives in terms of finance to open and work in areas which are of low productivity, for instance, those dedicated to pastures.
And that, I guess, is part of the challenge. There is, as you say, no one-size-fits-all solution. It really has to be down to individual farm level sometimes before you can find the solution that will really work for the individual farmer.
Absolutely.
Question for you both, just in closing. Thank you very much for taking us through some of these examples and case studies of your work in different parts of South America. But thinking forward and building on what we've just been discussing, How do you think that the agricultural sector will continue to increase production in the face of an ever-growing population and then requirements for ever more production, whilst ensuring the preservation of forests and other essential biodiverse environments? Renata.
Well, to do this, we must take a multi-stakeholder approach. And I'm not talking about only about farmers, NGOs, and industry. We also have to include governments, customers, universities to find innovative, lasting solutions that will protect the forest and the native vegetation and also bring benefits, financial and economic benefits for producers and communities.
Gonzalo.
I think we must address like five strategic points here. One is that it's proof that we can produce sufficient food in the existing deforested areas. So there is no need really to chop down the trees and reduce the biodiversity. So then in order to reverse this, we need very strong policies that helps investors, producers to align producing more in deforested areas. This is one. The second is that still we see important productivity gaps, so we can still increase productivity in those areas which are already dedicated to agriculture. Then another very important issue is to freeze agricultural footprint. So we must stop by all means to continue producing at the expense of forest and native vegetation. Because as I already explained, working in deforested areas and increasing productivity, we can make it. We need to increase by one-fold to double production, food production by 2050. Another important issue is to reduce waste. We already have an important potential here to reduce waste. Last but not least, I think we need to shift some diets because the way consumption is leading now, particularly in developed societies and developing countries, is to push in for commodities that are associated with deforestation.
Okay, well, I think we've covered an awful lot there. And my thanks to Renata Nogueira from Cargill and to Gonzalo La Cruz from Solidaridad South America. We've covered a lot of ground and discussed a lot of different case studies and examples of how Cargill and Solidaridad have been working together in South America. But my thanks to you both and goodbye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And as ever, there's plenty more insight and analysis available on innovationforum.co.uk, including the usual audio interviews and podcasts. Recently published analysis includes an op-ed into why action on sustainability can be undermined by false science. And ahead of next week's conference, we look at the implications of the EU's Single-Use Plastic Directive. But that's all for now. I've been Ian Welsh, and I'll be back next week.